and welcome to the Teach Suzuki podcast. I'm Paula Bird, and I invite you to spend the next few minutes with me talking about something that may change our world, one child, one family, and one community at a time. Are you a parent of a child in the Suzuki Music Program? Do you want to learn how to be a better parent on the home front in between music lessons? Are you a teacher who wants to reach parents and help them become better parents who can help their child in more amazing ways to absorb the benefits of music education? Welcome to the Teach Suzuki podcast. I'm Paula Bird, and I invite you to spend some time talking about how to change the world, one child, one family, one community at a time. You may be thinking, well, what is this Suzuki method thing anyway? What's so special about it? I don't want my child to be a famous musician or anything. I just heard that music lessons were good things for kids. I remember taking piano lessons and having a fun time learning to play an instrument in the band and school orchestra when I was growing up. My folks let me quit lessons, though, and I've always regretted that. So I want my child to have as much fun as I did. Is that what you're thinking? Or maybe you're thinking that violin lessons sounded like a good idea in the beginning, and now the teacher seems to want you to work miracles with your child at home, and you're having a hard time getting your child to practice even a little bit, let alone every day like the teacher wants. And then there are those families and parents who don't even know where to begin, and they think that they're failing to do the best that they can because they don't even know what the best is. Perhaps you are a teacher and you're struggling to get your parents to understand what their role could be in the Suzuki lessons. You know that parent education is a good thing in the long run, but you're not sure how to even get to that point. You might be thinking, how do I get my parents to understand what it is they need to do, what I expect them to do, in order for their child to be successful? I have been there. I have experienced all of that. I have been a teacher of violin and piano for over 40 years. I wasn't always the most successful teacher in the beginning because I didn't have the training and experience at that point, but I have probably seen, heard, or read about it all by now. I know that I can help if you will let me. At least, let's enter into a conversation about the things that parents and teachers struggle with. And I don't mean that we have to discuss things in the context of the Suzuki method only. Teaching is teaching. Parenting is parenting. Whether we are learning how to play the violin or piano, some other instrument, or even no music lessons at all, there is still something of value here that I can offer, and I hope that you will join me in this discussion. After all, teachers and parents are basically doing the same thing when it comes to children. Parents are children's first teachers. So any discussion about teaching and educating children will be helpful for a parenting discussion as well. This is my first official podcast episode. My plan is to publish a longer episode like this one every week on a general topic that relates to teaching or parenting. I may discuss this topic in the context of a music lesson because that may be the easiest scenario for us to understand. But the topic will apply to parents and teachers everywhere, whether music or not. I hope that you will comment and email me with your suggestions for topics and your questions and problems, and I'll see how we can come up with common solutions together as a community. I will also continue to post a shorter podcast episode, perhaps just minutes in length, and I like to call these reflections. Although these short episodes are mainly developed to help parents gain a deeper understanding of how to apply the Suzuki philosophy in the home, these episodes will also be helpful for teachers as well. I read Dr. Suzuki's books frequently, sometimes as often as once a year, and I write short reflections on Dr. Suzuki's writings. From my reading, I long ago concluded he must have been an amazing man. His written words pack quite a wallop in terms of value to parents and teachers or anyone else who's involved with the education or rearing up of children. I hope that you will enjoy listening to these short reflections podcast episodes that I plan to post on Sundays, as well as the longer weekly episodes. Enough introductions. Let's move on. Let's get started. What is the Suzuki method anyway? Well, I remember my introduction to it. This would have been maybe when I was a college student in Philadelphia. I was a music student. I had a part-time job across the river in a small music store in New Jersey. So I would ride the high-speed train across the river and teach a few days a week in this little music store. The owner of the store one day gave me a book by Dr. Suzuki. This is his Nurtured by Love book. And I read it on the journey back to school. It's a short book, so it takes about an hour to read. If you haven't had the pleasure of reading it until now, I highly encourage it. And if you have read it, maybe you will enjoy repeat reading of it to refresh and renew your enthusiasm like I do. Anyway, the book and Dr. Suzuki's story just fascinated me. His theories about how we learn to speak our native language, they resonated with me. I've always enjoyed learning languages, and so I found it interesting how his learning a different language when he was studying in Germany led him to his educational philosophies. His desire to create a world of fine, noble human beings spoke of a calling that I felt I could stand behind for the rest of my life. I found it easy to believe that we could affect the way the world becomes by how we raise our children. So you see, Dr. Suzuki's argument that being exposed to good music written by the masters in our civilization, masters such as Mozart or Beethoven, Brahms, etc., that this would also teach children and anyone else who's listening how to absorb the same emotional ideas and noble ideals that were expressed by the composers. I often tell new parents in my studio that when we teach music education, we are exposing our children to the best that our culture and society has to offer over the past several hundred years. Something good has got to rub off on the children as a result of that exposure, don't you agree? I have been teaching 40 years or more, and I have experimented with many ideas expounded by Dr. Suzuki. I have seen the wonder and the magic behind the method as it teaches children how to be better people with more noble spirits and hearts. I am still amazed by how the slightest adjustment or tweaking of some aspect of a child's or a person's environment will profoundly affect the child's life in a good way. I frequently ask myself the question, does it matter? Does this matter? Does it matter what I do? Does it matter that we care about doing this with our children? You know, there is a story that Dr. Suzuki's wife, Valtroid, I think they say her name is, she tells in the film called Nurtured by Love. When we get to that part of the film where it discusses John Kendall, he was the American professor who went over to Japan to investigate further what this Suzuki method thing was all about. Well, when John Kendall got over there and first was meeting with Dr. Suzuki and talking about his plans to take the Suzuki method and back to America and show Americans how powerful the method could be, Dr. Suzuki's wife tells the story that Dr. Suzuki didn't think that American mothers would want to do the things that the Suzuki method asked of them. Suzuki's wife said that she quickly stepped in and said, oh, I think mothers would be happy to do this. I think mothers everywhere would want to do what's best for their children, so they would want to do this. And in my experience, parents do want what's best for their children. I have no doubts about that. As a teacher, I've not had any difficulty asking a parent to focus on what's best for their child. As a teacher, I think that most of what I have had to do, in addition to teaching the child and the parent how best to learn the technique for playing the violin or piano, my job has been to help the parent sharpen their focus on the child. With all the things that we need to do every week, many parents are overwhelmed on a constant basis with everything that needs to be accomplished. That's when my job becomes the most important. That's when I can help to keep our lens focused on the child and the child's needs. So back to my first question, which was, what is this Suzuki method thing anyway? What are you talking about? I'm going to just talk about some of the basic features. I'm just going to enumerate them, and then we can talk about them in a lot more depth in future episodes. But there are some special features that are part of the Suzuki method. Although today, I think so many places and people and teachers and organizations recognize the value of these ideas that were first expounded by the Suzuki Method, that they now incorporate them as a regular course of business. So if you were to buy music nowadays for children or to learn, they're usually accompanied by a CD. And that, I think, is because of a result of the Suzuki Method. But here are some of the features of the Suzuki Method. And if you want more information about this, you can always go to the SuzukiAssociation.org, which is our American national organization of Suzuki teachers. You can join as a parent or a teacher or even as a consortium of teachers and parents. Anyway, here are some of the basic features. First of all, parental involvement. I don't know about y'all, but when I first started learning how to play the violin and the piano, I did have a parent who understood music because she also played the piano herself, but my piano teacher had a lesson with me, and it was just me. My parent was not in the room with me, even though I was a very, very young child. So can you imagine? My mind is boggled by the idea that I took piano lessons as a five-year-old and did not have anyone there to take notes for me or to explain what it was that I was supposed to do at home or how I was supposed to practice. I mean, seriously, how many five-year-olds do you know who are able to go home and translate what they learned at school and then do homework? That's probably why most of our schools provide homework assignments later on, because the child just doesn't seem to have that ability yet. That's not what we're interested in as young children. But anyway, parental involvement, that is a huge deal in the Suzuki world. In fact, we call that the Suzuki triangle: teacher, parent, and child. There's an equilateral, is that what they call it? Equilateral triangle of one of each of those things is important to the entire relationship in the Suzuki world. But we're going to spend a lot more time talking about that later on, especially as different problems arise, as people suggest comments and things. That's when the triangle relationship discussion is most important. Another big feature of the Suzuki world is the early beginning. Dr. Suzuki felt very strongly that the earliest years of a child's development were the most crucial one for developing the mental processes and the muscle coordination that would be needed later for the child. And also, children's oral capacities sort of peak at their years of language acquisition. I believe I remember reading an article. I was looking at a discussion about brain synapses and how many of them are we born with, kind of thing. And I discovered that we are born with billions and billions of them. I always thought of education when I was growing up as if we were sort of cramming things into our brain and making our brain grow larger as a result. But since I've been doing some more brain research, I've completely turned my thinking upside down. And I believe exactly the opposite, that we are born with everything that we possibly need. When I found out that we have billions of synapses when we're born, and that these things, basically, as they're not used, they start to fall away. Like kind of like a leaky bucket, I call it, that my brain is a leaky bucket. I'm born with every possibility when I'm younger, and then as I get older, if I don't use it, it just leaks right away, just floats out of my brain. And of course, you know, those of you who are aging as well probably have that same experience. Anyway, so to me, now I understand even more how crucial it is for young children to begin as early as they possibly can. You can start as early as 3 or 4. I have started them at 2.5 when they're like a sibling of some student in my studio already. And, you know, at birth or even in the womb, there are opportunities for the parent to begin preparing their child for this kind of learning and education. Another big component in the Suzuki Method is listening. Children are born listening. They are born into an environment with sound and listening and language. Parents are part of the child's environment with language. They hear it. They're exposed to it wherever they go. They're exposed to it in the media. And Dr. Suzuki thought this was correct. This is how you learned your language. And so he would ask parents who whose children were learning to play the music instrument to also add this musical component to the child's listening environment. So listening is a huge deal in the Suzuki world. And as I said earlier, this is why you will now find recordings attached to most of the sheet music that you can buy in a music store. Repetition is a big deal for the Suzuki method. Just as when we learn a word in our language, we don't let that word fall by the wayside. We continue to use it over and over in our language. So Dr. Suzuki built his repertoire in a manner that would build on the skills and abilities in earlier songs learned, and he would put them again in later songs in a more advanced context. So repetition and review are a very big part of the Suzuki method. Encouragement and nurturing is also a big part of the Suzuki method. In fact, nurturing, well, that's the name of Dr. Suzuki's book, Nurtured by Love. Nurturing, encouragement, compassion, empathy, love, especially love, kindness, gentleness, all of these wonderful, noble traits are the things that Dr. Suzuki asked parents to make sure they were adding into the child's environment. And that goes for teachers, too. We're not doing the, quote, traditional way, which, frankly, I'm not really sure I like the distinctions between traditional and Suzuki teachers because, you know, I could teach traditionally, which means using a repertoire outside of the Suzuki books. That's what traditional means to me. And I can still be a Suzuki teacher in the way that I approach my students. But that's another discussion for another day. Let's just move on. So let's just think about encouragement being a big deal. We don't weed them out or winnow them out. We don't just take the most talented ones to begin with. No, we have a different philosophy as the Suzuki teachers that we can build ability and skill development, that it's something that you learn, not something that you're created or born with. Another feature of the method is learning with other children, and oh my, this is probably one of the most favorite things for the students involved in the music program in the Suzuki world, is the group class, or going to institutes, which is also part of, has a group component as well. The kids love to play with other students. They love the social aspects, and there's so many wonderful benefits in the educational process when you have more than one child in the room at the same time. And then leadership skill training, all kinds of social skill training, all kinds of other things come into play. And the kids have so much fun doing it as well. And then the other two features of the Suzuki method that are important, one of them is the graded repertoire that Dr. Suzuki has provided us with. His legacy of the music that he slaved many, many hours to put together things in a particular sequence that built on the skills of the previous sequences. And it is such a wonderful graded repertoire that it is used almost everywhere in the world today, even by teachers who have not received any specialized Suzuki teacher training. It's that good a program of materials. And then the final one, and probably the most obvious feature of the Suzuki method, is the delayed reading. Dr. Suzuki believed in not teaching children to read at the very first moment that they were learning to speak, but instead to wait until their ability to speak or play had already been established. And we call that reading ready in the Suzuki world. We wait till the child's reading ready. Obviously, a two-year-old isn't reading ready, but perhaps a five-year-old might be reading ready. Perhaps a seven-year-old is reading ready. And we're talking reading in terms of music reading. So we wait to do that until the child's able to play and has established the appropriate posture and technical playing requirements, and then we introduce the reading aspect to it is at that time. This helps the child to learn to use their ears in the most optimum way before they start to use their eyes. And that's a big discussion that we can get into in a much later time. But in the beginning now, I just wanted to start out by laying out the basics of the Suzuki method, and then I can talk later about the importance of things and how that might relate with problems and stuff as teachers and parents are working through aspects of the program. So I'm going to enumerate these things again. It was parental involvement, an early start, a very strong listening requirement component, review and repetition, encouragement, learning with other children, a graded repertoire, and the last one was delayed reading.
This is Paula Bird signing off from the Teach Suzuki podcast, where we talk about how to change our world one child, one family, and one community at a time.